following announcement has been paid for by the New World Order.
Remember this. When you're the greatest fighter in the world today, they got a name for you. They don't call you a great fighter. They call you Chael Sonnen. Beat me if you can.
And after tonight, none of you in this ring will ever... again!
You're talking to the Rolex wearing, diamond ring wearing, kid stealing, woo, wheeling, dealing, limousine wreck, jet flying, son of a gun, and I'm having a hard time holding these alligators down. Woo!
I'm gonna drink a Coors Light. That's a Coors Light because Bud Light won't pay me nothing.
And I have in my cold beer. You have your cold beer? If not, you are fucking jabroni.
Wash it down with one beer, two beers, three beers, a shot of whiskey.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
The following announcement has been paid for by the New World Order.
Hey, it's FRB, and welcome to the FRB show for the week of December 15th, 2014. It's been a hectic couple of weeks. I was in Vegas for UFC 1 and then for the UFC show in Phoenix. Had a great time. Actually, too much fun. I missed my damn flight for the first time ever in my life. I missed a flight. I was going from Phoenix back home. And, you know, had a few too many cold beers and forgot to set my alarm. So, missed my flight. So, and then work, and then a bunch of other stuff, life. So, this is a shorter episode than the other ones, but it's a great guest. We have Luke Rockhold, who's, I think, the biggest threat to Chris Weidman for the UFC middleweight title. So, hope you guys... enjoy it, and I'll be back next week working on a couple guests. I will definitely talk about the lawsuit against the UFC, and we might have a guest co-host who is actually a UFC fighter that I know. So might be doing a little bit something different, try to make this as entertaining as possible. So with that, here's Bruce. Welcome to the FRB show, and when I told you a couple weeks ago that we were bringing the heavy artillery early, I wasn't joking. Today we got the former Strikeforce middleweight champion of the world, and I don't care what the UFC rankings say. You know, to me, there's a guy who's the champion. His name is Chris Weidman, and there's a number one contender, and he's my guest right now. His name is Luke Rockhold. What's going on, Luke?
I like the way you think, Brian. I like the way you think.
I mean,
you're a very informed individual, so you know, I'll take it.
Have you seen those rankings, though, man? I mean, they have Anderson Silva as a number one contender, Jacare, who you beat in a 5-round match. You got number three, Vitor Belfort, who you know, has lost about 30 pounds in the past 6 months. Machida at 4, and then you're at 5.
None of it makes any sense to me, to tell you the truth. You know, Belfort, I understand. I mean, he should be the number one contender, given what he's done and where he's at. I have no idea where you put Anderson Silva at this point. obviously the Jacare, I don't agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's very difficult.
All over the place. I don't even know who does the who's the reporters, who's on the panel right now.
Well, the problem is the most credible journalists really they're not doing it. They said it's some kind of they don't want to be involved with it.
Yeah.
So
it's crazy. It's crazy. You know, we have a panelist of journalists who are ranking us as the best fighters in the world who have never fought or trained probably a day in their life. It's a weird thing, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And
how do they judge it? I don't know. How do they judge that? I mean, you only know so much until you get in there.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I mean, 2014 for you has been a really good year. You know, you beat Philippou, Bosch, Bisping, all by finish. You know, all three very respected guys. And at this point, are you preparing for that fight in L.A. in February against Chris Weidman?
You know, given the landscape of fighting and how people fall out all the time, it's not a bad idea to be ready to go. You know, I've talked to the bosses and a lot of people, and people are telling me to stay ready because anything can happen. You know, those are four fighters, and people drop out all the time. So I'll be ready to go for that. Otherwise, I know Machida is out there. As long as he has a good performance next week and wins, I'm not opposed to that either.
Yeah, I steal a line from my buddy Chael. He said a couple of years ago that he always liked to hear when Vitor was going to fight and when Vanderlei was going to fight, because that would tell him exactly when to start his training camp, because he knew neither of them was going to show up.
If it's in Brazil, you know, they might show up.
Yeah, it just kind of depends. But, you know, it's interesting you brought up Dolloway and Machida, because I see you could possibly face the winner of that. And then I also see another possibility being Jacare versus Romero, Yoel Romero winner. Are you looking at that fight too, or that's in February, so that'd be too far out for you?
Truthfully, you know, I'll be ready for, I know they like the Machida matchup, that's something they're interested in. As long as he goes out there and does his job and performs, I could see that happening. Jacare, I don't think he wants to fight me. To tell you the truth, I offered to fight him a while back, and he declined to fight me. He said he wanted to fight with Saucy. And obviously, I went after it again with this last fight, and decided a Romero fight pretty quickly. So, I don't see Jacare winning. If he wins that fight, I don't see how he would accept the fight with me at that point. You know, he's already calling for the title, so I don't blame him, whatever. But, you know, I've been pursuing that fight. You know.
Sure.
I beat him. I beat him, and they somehow rank him above me, which obviously pisses me off, and I'd like to rectify that situation. So that's my whole point in asking for that fight.
I think one of the issues is that people that are doing the voting, like, they probably weren't even watching the sport when you fought Jacare, and it's not like it was 10 years ago.
Yeah, it was a while back, you know, but, I don't know. It was a five-round fight. It's not like it was a quick fight, you know, I beat him, I caught him or something stupid. It's like a test of wills just a brutal match, and I proved myself, I think, in five rounds against him, and I do it again. I think I finished him this time.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty clear. You know, you guys fought for 25 minutes, and it was very clear who the better guy was. Now, another idea that I'm sure you've thought of, but I'll bring it up here and pretend I'm really smart, is if Anderson Silva gets by Nick Diaz, whatever date that is, January 31st, I think from a business perspective for you, if you were to challenge Anderson Silva in the main event of a pay-per-view, it would do a lot for your brand, do a lot for your bank account, and I think it's a fight Anderson would be interested in.
Those are two things I'm very interested in, building my brand, building my bank account. So and Tony Legend, of course. I like it too. I like what you think. I'm not gonna lie, it's a ways away, but you know, anything could happen in between that. So, but that's still on the table at that point for sure. I'd love to.
Right. So right now, you're helping Daniel Cormier prepare for John Jones, UFC 182. And from what I've read, from what I've heard, you're emulating John Jones. You've put on a little bit of weight. I don't know if that's true. Maybe you can tell us. And is it tough emulating John Jones? Because there doesn't seem to be too many guys like John Jones.
Yeah. No, it's actually kind of cool. You know, I've been trying to do some John Jones techniques. And to tell you the truth, I've actually started to use them in my own repertoire. You know, a couple of the kicks, the check kicks, side kicks, and control the distance. There's certain things I'm actually using now, like, you know, subconsciously, it just comes out. So I'm not necessarily putting on weight. I was just joking, and I just like to eat. So I was enjoying myself on the off season, but I'm a little big. You know, I'm trying to stay in decent shape, though. I'm under 210. I'm happy with that.
Yeah, so you're within striking distance of the of middleweight, but you know, a lot of people, they might not know that there's a fellow from Iran named Gasilov, and he's a 5-time world champion. And I've heard and I've seen on Instagram that he's in camp. He's at AKA. And do you have any impressions of him? He's not well known in this country, but he's a 5-time world champion in freestyle wrestling, and you put him in any other country, and he's like John Jones or Chuck Liddell in his prime.
Yeah, Gasilov is nasty. Watching him wrestle live against DC was pretty amazing to see the guys. Just watching him warm up, he just does so many different weird styles, and his body moves in different ways for such a big guy, too. It's pretty fun to watch. I don't know about him coming to MMA. He came and trained with us, sparred a couple days, I guess. But I think he was visiting out, and he's looking forward to meeting up with DC and getting some good training. I know he wants to go for the Olympics again. He wants to go for gold, 2016. That's what my impression of where he was at. Came to Santa Cruz. He's a better surfer than Cormier, though. I'll give you that. Took Cormier on his first session, and you know, he barely got to his feet. Gasilov actually rode every wave I pushed him into all the way to the beach. I was pretty impressed. You know,
yeah,
definitely outdid Cormier. Put Cormier to shame in the surfing world.
So that's interesting because it goes back to your background. You have a brother who's a pro surfer, and it looked like you were going to follow in his footsteps. And you also have a sister, from what I researched, that was into jiu-jitsu, and you were wrestling at the time, but then transitioned to jiu-jitsu. Do I have the story right?
Yeah, similar. You know, I was my parents believed in school sports and keep me out of trouble, and I was trying to get away from that in high school, and they made me choose a school sport. One of my good friends was wrestling, who I was wrestling with in junior high, so ended up sticking with wrestling. My sister and her brother-in-law saw me wrestle. They always watched my matches and saw I had a different funky style. And they're into jiu-jitsu and they're all about it. So they kept trying to drag me in, and they finally dragged me in. I think I was a sophomore in high school and tried it out a few times. And I was like, oh, this is awesome. You know, it's more of a finish. You get to choke people out. It's not about just putting people on your back. It's more creative. So I dabbled with it a little bit in high school, but I was committed to wrestling to finish, and once I was finished with that, I jumped full into jiu-jitsu because I didn't really have that physical outlet. So jiu-jitsu gave me that, and I quit wrestling because there was no professional outlet. I wasn't going to pursue it in college and torture myself, which I knew that I've already been through the training camps, summer camps I did. But my sister was good. She was I think she won blue belt Pan American. She's a very smart girl, so she ended up being a forensic anthropologist instead.
Yeah, because I mean, when I first heard about you, I was like, well, you know, he looks like a good fighter, a good stand up fighter, has some skills, And I was like, yeah, but what happens when a wrestler comes and takes them down? And that, you know, I didn't really know that that was wrestling was actually your base, because they really don't talk about it much, and that maybe that works to your advantage.
Yeah, people underestimate my wrestling, no doubt. I mean, I could have had a couple scholarship offers, actually, to go to some smaller colleges. I just didn't want to do it. I went to the, you know, I made it to the state championships in high school. I had a different style of wrestling. I was a leg rider. I always did punk stuff, and I got screwed. And I got screwed in, like, the Central Coast section. I got screwed in state. People didn't know how to judge me and wrestle me. So I left a better taste on off, and ended up quitting wrestling. And then that's when I jumped into jiu-jitsu. And so I can wrestle with the best of them. You know, my defensive wrestling is, you know, I believe it's second to none in my division. So,
yeah.
You know, I'm comfortable wherever it goes. You know, so I can wrestle. I just haven't needed to wrestle. Trust me, I can.
Sure. And, you know, you mentioned high school, and that kind of reminds me of another story I heard about that you were in a ceramics class, and you were an expert at a certain type of ceramic.
Sculpting.
Okay. So can you tell us about that a little bit?
I was always, you know, I was always good with my hands. I like ceramics, from, you know, doing that in like sixth grade or something. I think I had a good pool art teacher. So I followed into high school. And everyone's thing in high school was to, a lot of guys growing up in tankers, everyone wanted to build a bomb. And it was a theme, you know, for all the classes. And so our ceramics teacher would see these bombs hit the firing shelf, and he would analyze them and be like, that's a bomb. And he ended up breaking, like, everyone start making a habit of breaking them. People just kept trying to force them through and get them fired. I saw that, and just kind of, I'm a competitive person, so now it's mean to beat the teacher and disguise something, make something where you can't not fire it. And, you know, you have to disguise the bomb so creatively that, you know, you have to fire it. I didn't even think about it. And I started doing it, and there was so much attention around it that, you know, I kind of was building a bomb. but I got so carried away with it, and I did so much, I went so above and beyond what anybody would do, that he actually got to the shelf, and he kind of knew it before he was going to get there, and he saw it, and he ended up firing it, and after he was done firing it, he held it in front of his classes and told everybody, he's like, you put this much time and effort, and like, literally every class he has told everybody, if you make a bomb, you know, this nice or something, he basically said that, I'll fire it for you.
So
long story short, is like he was like all inspired by it, and he's like, he was actually helping me and like giving me info on how to glaze the thing, not to overdo it and this and that. But we ended up collaborating on a glaze that I did, and I did that, and then the high school, you know, county art show came up, and we ended up submitting it, and of course, I won the whole art show. It's pretty hilarious.
So, is that what like led to your brief flirtation with pursuing art in college? Is that like the origin of it?
Oh yeah, I was always one of the best at, you know, ceramics, and I didn't have a clear direction of what I wanted to do. You know, I always thought I was going to be a professional athlete, and that what I was pursuing wrestling. Obviously, that not happening. And surfing and skating, it's hard to make those professions, you know, as a big guy, especially as a big guy like myself, you know, not with wrestling all through high school. It's not like I solely focused on surfing and skating growing up, so it was hard to, it would be hard to jump into that area, and so tentatively I was focusing on art and just doing jiu-jitsu on the side. Started doing very good in jiu-jitsu, winning tournaments. You know, I took second in the Pan American, the first tournament I entered. I jumped from white belt to blue belt just to do it. Ended up taking second. And then in my third semester of junior college, my dad had a heart aneurysm. And he ended up going into a coma for about 3 weeks up at Stanford. And it dragged me away from school. And I ended up going up there every day with my brothers and visiting him, and I lost focus. and I never ended up going back to school after that, and just started pursuing jiu-jitsu, and then eventually pursuing fighting. But realizing how, once I started winning those big tournaments, I was like, maybe I could fight. I know I was tough. I was getting some street fights and that. Wasn't scared to fight, so ended up pursuing that from then on.
Yeah, is your dad okay? Did he make a recovery?
Yeah, he made a recovery. He finally woke up.
Good.
And he's all right.
Good.
Still here.
Yeah, good. That's better than the alternative. But
yeah, he's got a ticker in his heart. He's got like a mechanical valve, so he can have the aorta burst. So it's a long
right.
story. But I think the first guy actually pulled the story that in. So there you go.
I wanted to ask you about another wrestler, a very well-known wrestler that's been linked to AKA or is part of the gym already. Is the 18-year-old phenom Aaron Pico? Have you been in the gym with him? Have you seen him, you know, roll or throw hands? And you have any first impressions of him?
I haven't seen Pico in the gym with us yet. He's I talked to him. We've met a few times. I've seen him in Vegas. We had dinner, and then I've seen him in Fresno. Talked. He's a good kid. He's very humble. You know, he's a hungry kid. Determined, he wants a lot of things, and he's very good at a lot of things. I think he's just, you know, it's about focusing the kid on one direction rather than trying to be the best boxer and MMA fighter and wrestler in the world. You know, the guy wants everything, and so, you know, he's got a good head on his shoulders, but he just needs to be point, have a good direction, you know, have the right people in his corner to make sure he doesn't spread himself too thin. You know, I think that's a big problem with the athletes. If you want to be the best in the world, you got to solely focus on one thing. So, you know, he's supposed to come in, and I think January, he's talking about he has a little break, and he might come in January, December, so, or right around here. So, we'll see. Hopefully he comes in. I've been impressed. I've watched his videos in boxing, and obviously I've seen him wrestle, and I know he's got a heard about him. He got a good feel for jiu-jitsu, I guess. So, he seems like to be the phenom that he made out to be.
Yeah, I actually had a chance to meet him. I got a buddy, John Reeder. He's a national champion from Iowa State. I was at his wedding, I don't know, 2 or 3 months ago, and Aaron was out there. And, you know, you just see this baby-faced kid, and just like you said, the most humble kid, and you're just like, there's the LeBron James of wrestling. And, you know, just very unassuming. Hardworking kid, and with the people that I've talked to, the only concern is, you know, like you said, is it too much too soon, and does he want too much?
Yeah, I think part of the reason why him signing with Bellator, he wants to be, you know, he wants to be the best boxer in the world too. Mm-hmm. He wants to be the best MMA fighter and the best boxer, so with Bellator, he has an option to fight both. I think that's a bad idea.
Yeah.
If I have anything to say, I'm going to try to encourage him to pick a direction.
Yeah.
And he listens, though. He actually looks up, you know, he listens to me. I was talking to him. He's all excited to come and train with us. It's fun to keep the good kid. We'll see.
Yeah, well, I mean, he couldn't have picked a better gym. I mean, AKA is a factory, and, you know, that's quite a room that you guys have there on a daily basis. But wanted to also get your thoughts. I don't know if you had the opportunity to hear it or read about it with Brendan Schaub and Joe Rogan. And Joe Rogan, I mean, obviously it was set up. I mean, Schaub was told him, hey, go after me hard. It'll make for good radio. Did you have an opportunity to listen to it? Did you agree with it? Or did you think it was just like, hey, you know, for somebody that promotes, you know, punching people in the head every week, was it like, what are you talking about, man?
I have the opportunity to check it out. I watched a little bit of it. Didn't see the end. Everyone said he was crying. Was he really crying? You know, Joe's real. Joe's real, and he's got a pretty good eye for the sport. Sorry, it's tough to say. You know, Schwab doesn't, at times he doesn't look like he like really wants to fight, like he's, you know, he's searching for something. But I mean, look, there's a lot of people that you could say that should have retired a long time ago. Look at Andre Arlovski. You know, he lost his chinny. Everyone says he should have retired. He should have been out, never come back. And now what is he ranked now? Is he top 10 in the world now? Or pretty up there. He just knocked out Bigfoot. So
yeah,
I don't know. I mean, people can always make resurgences. But I haven't seen him fight the way he should fight. He looks nervous up there. Looks, you know, he doesn't come with that same confidence he had. Once you lose your confidence, it's a big deal. You seen him when he was confident in the striking, when he fought those guys previous, the Krokov fight he had, and some other guys. He believed in his power and believed in his chin. And once you don't believe in, you know, one of those, you're at a big disadvantage. Confidence is everything in fighting. If you can't walk in with confidence, you shouldn't be in the cage.
Yeah, it's probably time to, you know, find another profession, which I guess Joe and the other guy, I don't know his name, he was trying to tell him to do something else. But, you know, I kind of felt like, hey, I mean, if you're going to tell every guy to quit that's been knocked out 3 or 4 times, you know, you're going to have a pretty short roster. I mean, this stuff happens. It's not like boxing where you're taking hundreds of punches in a single match. I mean, you take one square, you're going to sleep.
Yeah, nice. A lot of truth to that, and that's why I don't believe knockdowns happen a lot more. I don't believe they should be rated as highly, you know, as boxing. But you know, did he really get knocked out his last fight? He pretty much got stopped. He's still conscious, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was still there, but you could tell he was incredibly confused, because like he said something to Brown like, I'm okay, what's going on? And it was just like, man, yeah, you were out of it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can. It's just about refocusing yourself and coming back. Rogan did, I did hear him say one pretty smart thing, is that you can't fight with one foot out the door. That's a huge thing. If you're setting retirement up and focusing on you know, your life outside the cage, and you know, trying to fight while setting up, you know, what you're doing, not solely focusing on being the best fighter you can be and being present, rather than like trying to look ahead and I'm gonna make some money off this fight to cure myself here or there. You know, it's just a horrible idea. And so I mean, you gotta be 100% focused on fighting if you want to fight.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I don't think this is something that you can do half-ass. And, you know, if he already has one foot out the door, then, you know, maybe he should just move along. But, you know, I guess it's the opportunity to make $50 or $75 or $100,000 in one night is too seducing, even for people that are like Shab, who has you know, a good background. He seems like a smart guy. He could get a regular job, but it's kind of seducing to make that type of money in one night.
Yeah, no, it definitely sucks in, and just the lifestyle. For me, it's like, it depends on how much you love it. I love sparring. I love fighting, and just the daily routine of getting in the gym and in training. I feel blessed every day. I'm driving home from practice. I left at 11 o'clock. I drove to practice. I got there at, you know, 11:45, warmed up, trained for 2 hours. I'm already back home at 3 o'clock, and, you know, I got most of the day done. I mean, this is a dream. And, you know, I really love fighting. Obviously, training camps get a little exhausting when you have to get up and get in the gym when you're broken and bruised, and that sucks. But, like, right now, I don't have a fight scheduled, and I've never been so motivated in my life to train. It's like, it's actually exciting, especially where I am in my career. You know, I feel like I'm at the, you know, reaching the pinnacle of my career. You know, I'm reaching my potential, and I'm inspired to get in the gym and train. And it's pretty awesome. I love it when I don't have a fight. You know, I'm like, every day I'm trying to better myself now, and it's pretty cool. It's pretty fun. Yeah, but I'm sure it'll I'll turn the corner a little bit, get a little exhausted about it when you have a fight on your mind. You know, you start thinking everything, overthinking, analyzing things.
Sure. And this is on a little bit lighter note, and then I'll get you out of here. And you know, but you know, you probably know Chael's son is one of my really good friends, and his wife Brittany. She's beautiful. She's a really nice girl. She's addicted to reality television. That's all she watches, reality television. So you know where I'm going with this. So she sends me a text, and she's like, "Why is Luke Rockhold on Millionaire Matchmaker? Like, I was supposed to know. I didn't know that you were on there 3 or 4 months ago." So how are you on Millionaire Matchmaker, and you told them like you hadn't had a girlfriend in 9 years. You got the movie star good looks. How does this happen?
How am I not on Millionaire Matchmaker? What are you talking about? I don't know. I mean, I've built somewhat, I guess, of a reputation in the UFC for myself, and you know, I don't really have girls around because they hold you back, and I've been solely focused on being the best I can be as a fighter. So I've kind of messed around a lot. I've been all over the board, but they approached the UFC, like asking them about, you know, a good fit for their show, maybe one of the fighters, and pretty much everybody just immediately pointed the finger at me. So I happily obliged, and wait till you see the show. It should be pretty all time. Tentatively, I'll tell you my show should air January 29th is what they said tentatively. So,
okay. And what channel is that on? I'm not a reality show guy either.
I'm not a reality show guy either, but you know, it's on Bravo.
You know, I'm gonna have to ask Brittany. She'll know.
Yeah, you know, I've gotten some bunch of random people have always seen my the commercial because they keep playing the commercial for the new season. I believe it started this week or next week, I think, or something like that.
Yeah.
Everybody's been hitting me up about it, and realizing I'm on the show. Did I just see you on Millionaire Matchmaker? What the hell? And I'm just laughing. So it's gonna be pretty all time. I'm not gonna lie. I think I'm like the part of the finale or something. Some funny stuff happened on the show. I was trying to coast, but then I got caught at the end, and things kind of blew up in my face a bit. It's gonna be fun. Good reality TV.
So it's not like you're on for like one episode. It's like a season.
No. I believe it's one episode. I like one episode to myself, or I split with the on the Real Housewives of Miami or something like that. I'm not exactly sure how it goes, but yeah, I have one episode, and they picked up like a bunch of girls for me. She picked a final group of three girls. I had to pick the three girls. I was supposed to pick from the three girls. Something there might have been, you know, changing the game, but I'm always changing things up, and it's gonna be worthwhile. I'm not gonna lie. There's a lot of fun stuff that happens. I don't know much I can say, but I went my own path. Let's just say.
Cool. Well, we'll have to watch it. It'll be the first Millionaire Matchmaker show that I watch, but. Just a couple quick things. I don't want to take up too much of your time. Just some quick hits that people on Twitter asked me to ask you. They wanted to know because they know like how well conditioned you are, and they were curious as to what your resting heart rate is.
I have a really low, slow heart rate, especially when I'm training. Obviously, I don't think anyone trains as hard as me, cardio and anything. I put more work in than anybody, and everyone talks about Bisping's heart rate. I remember building up to that fight. I was getting as low as 32 beats per minute, I believe, you know, my resting heart rate. Okay. We were doing this machine. This guy has got it's a recovery machine in it. Like, they put all these heart monitors on you, and it reacts to that. It's called ECP, I believe, and kind of like these leg pumps, and it goes all the way up to your waist, and it pumps all blood, like double pumps it through your heart, so getting a lot more oxygen, a lot more flow, and helps the healing process. And the machine was shutting down because I was getting below 34 beats per minute. I kept getting down to like 30. I got to 32 quite a bit. And so I would have to actually, I started drinking coffee. And before I had to come in, like eat some like dark chocolate and drink some coffee just to make the machine work better.
Wow. Wow. And this question is from Reed Kuhn, the author of Fightnomics. He wanted to know that the picture that you took on Instagram, what you're just hanging out at the beach or at a lake or something, and you have a copy of his book. Was that just a prop, or did you read his book?
I checked in on his book quite a bit. I did some homework, and it's interesting. You know, I'm a student of the game, and I looked into it.
Gotcha.
I'm not gonna lie. It was, I think I took a picture in Thailand. I was in Thailand, so try to catch up on my reading and traveling.
Yeah, that reminds me. What were you doing in Thailand with a tiger? What was that about?
We're going to get into the tiger now.
The short version.
The short version. I mean, I was out in Macau. I was a guest fighter in Macau, and Swick is an affiliate gym of ours out in Thailand, and he created the amazing gym. Places one of the nicest gym I've ever seen. And he's been trying to get me out there, and he heard I was coming out, and so he convinced me to come out for a few days. I had a few days on my schedule, and I ended up going out there, and we pretty much ran the gauntlet of Phuket, just did everything you could do in 3 days, and you know, got in there with the snakes, saw the tigers. That's all that happened with the tigers this fall. And then did it all up. Truthfully, I'm in there with a tiger, and I'm like, I always like to push the envelope. You know, I want to do something different. I'm not gonna lie. And I was just kind of playing it by ear, and I was like, they wouldn't let me get close to his head, and I was like, I wanted to like fake choke the tiger, and you know, just joking around, posing for pictures at least, and like I was sitting behind it, and making me sit behind it, and the thing's balls are sticking right out, and you know, like oh my god, and then like I'm like, look at this fucking ball, excuse me, I was just pointing to him, and then like the trainer's like, grab him, I'm like, what are you talking about? And he's like, grab him. He's just like joking around. He comes up and he grabs him right in front of my face. I'm like, are you serious right now? And I lift up the tire. He didn't like react too much. And then, okay. Real quick. Grab the camera, Swick, and just got the quick snap of the picture. And people blew it way out of proportion. It was just cupping them. I didn't have a strong grip. Trust me. This thing was lively.
Right.
And, people weren't talking about how they're drugged and everything, and you see, I mean, I barely touched him, and the thing turned around and looked at me straight in the eye to put the video out, you know, to follow the picture, just to make people realize, and the thing, yes, stared me square in the eyes, and I was just like, oh, shoot,
no.
I'm sorry, buddy, but, you know, it was like right after that, it was funny, there's another cat walking the yard, like about 100 yards away, almost. And the thing caught it on the corner of its eye, and it jumped up faster than I seen a tiger, and just spun right for us. And we had to jump out of the way because it was like it saw a female across the yard it really wanted to get to. And the thing was lively. I'm not gonna lie.
So, did you have a contingency?
You know, what's actually the funniest part about this is like people are like, you know, a lot of people talk about their drug tigers and this and that. Somebody got mauled actually about 2 weeks after I was there
For grabbing their balls?
No, I hope I didn't start a theme with that, you know. But somebody was just in there with a tiger. They you don't want to piss off the tigers when you're in the cage. So trust me, I'm not the guy to try to piss off a tiger and go, you know, square off with one. But
you were the one who upset it, and then the guy paid for what you did.
I think I just made him happy. I was just giving him a little, you know. Who doesn't want their balls cut? Who doesn't want their balls cut? Come on.
Right. Yeah. It's a very, very comforting thing. All right. Well, I couldn't.
I'll just leave it. We'll leave it at that. I ran out of that.
I couldn't end this without asking the obligatory question: CM Punk is he welcomed at AKA? Do you want to work out with him?
He's welcome. I mean, it's
yeah. he's welcome. But.
I don't mind guys coming to the gym to train. You know, the more guys, the better. Especially my weight. You know, it's nice. I get a lot of big guys. I ended up getting thrown in the mix with, so another guy my size is not going to hurt. It's a little more tension. Obviously, it's never bad. Never bad for you, so whatever.
But I can kind of see, like, if he was in there, the place would turn into a circus.
I mean, we got Cain Velasquez in the gym, Cormier, myself. We got a pretty high-profile gym. We keep it tight, you know what I mean? If he's in there, I mean, it's not going to be that big of a change.
Gotcha. All right. Yeah, that makes sense. Hey, Luke, thanks for the time, man. And, you know, looking forward to see what that next fight is. Because, you know, everybody I talk to, they say there's one guy that can beat Weidman. It's Luke Rockhold. It's not Vitor, you know, after he's off his medicine. And it's not any of the other jokesters that they got ranked ahead of you. If there's a guy that can take this guy down, it's you. So, looking forward to what that next fight will be, and best of luck to you in the future, man.
Thank you. Appreciate it. See you around, man. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's Friday evening, 6 o'clock, and all my friends are twisting off. I'm at the house just turning on TV. Well, they all wonder why I've changed. How many times must I explain? It's basic honky-tonk anatomy. The drinking bone's connected to the